Welcome to The Point on WCAI. I'm Catherine Iden, filling in for Steve Junker. This is our weekly news roundup. We'll discuss some of the top local news stories of the week with my colleagues in the print and digital media. Joining me on the line is Sean Driscoll, a reporter at the Cape Cod Times. Morning, Sean. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
On joining us a little later will be George Brennan from the Martha's Vineyard Times, Andy Tomalonis from the Standard Times, and Wood from the Provincetown Banner. And we'll check in with Josh Balling of the Enquirer and Mirror on Nantucket and Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle. But first, let's take a look at some of the news here on the Cape and Islands. Sean Driscoll is coming to us this morning from the Cape Cod Times newsroom. And Sean, top story of the week, of course, a national story, a white nationalist rally and protest in Charlottesville, Virginia, and the ripples from that protest, which turned violent, were felt even here on the Cape Cod. So what was some of the reaction we saw here on the Cape in the aftermath of that?
Well, there were two vigils in the immediate aftermath. There was one in Falmouth on Sunday morning, and then another one in Provincetown Monday night, at which, at least in Provincetown, more than 100 people came to stand, in their words, against white supremacy, racism, anti-Semitism, and homophobia. And it was inspired, as you said, by those that deadly day in Virginia. And they were aiming to mourn the lives lost and to try to show some solidarity with those in Charlottesville who stood up at the gathering.
Mm-hmm. And some lawmakers used Twitter and social media in the immediate aftermath to voice some criticism, both of the president and also to say that they would not tolerate any kind of hate or bigotry. And that includes State Representative Randy Hunt, who talked to his followers on Facebook, Congressman Bill Keating with multiple statements and Twitter posts, and U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, and even State Representative Timothy Whalen. Another kind of ripple effect, though, from the Charlottesville event was some graffiti in two towns on the Cape, right?
Right. There were swastikas found in both Sandwich and Mashpee this week. Of course, the timing, you never know if it's related or not, but it is, in the immediate aftermath, of course. And there was one found at Sandwich Hollow's golf course on Saturday when a Holbrook man allegedly was caught on camera carving four swastikas into the green on the ninth hole of the golf course with his club. And then on Tuesday, Mashpee police responded to a report that a hood of a vehicle in New Seabury had been painted with a swastika. Of course, the one in Sandwich, there was a man arrested charged with some crimes related to that, but the incident in Mashpee remains under investigation.
Mm. And interestingly, with the man in Sandwich, he was also he's also been charged with stealing. So he was there and not necessarily playing by the rules on multiple fronts.
Definitely. Allegedly.
Yes.
Right.
And, speaking of officials who've come out very strongly against these types of behaviors, Mashpee Selectman Andrew Gottlieb had some strong language, didn't he?
He did, yes. I mean, he said, I'm reading from the story that, he thinks that the signals that people, this is a quote, that signals that people are receiving have been taken as a green light for feelings that have long and for very good reason been forced into dark corners of the world. There aren't two sides on this, of course, referring to President Trump's comments. Anyone who espouses this type of hatred and bigotry needs to be called out for what they are, held accountable for their actions. So he very strongly drew a parallel between what happened in Mashpee and the events in Charlottesville and the previous weekend.
And, of course, we've been talking about this throughout Morning Edition, that there is a rally scheduled for Saturday, and they expect quite a few counter-protesters. We will be keeping an eye on that from our vantage point here on Cape Cod. But let's turn to some other news this week of things happening on the Cape. We have some development projects kind of up and coming or in progress, and we got some updates and various stories this week. Let's look first at the sports complex in Hyannis. It got a pretty big go-ahead from the Cape Cod Commission.
It did. Because of its size, that $12 million athletic complex that is proposed for Independence Park had to go to the commission, which has jurisdiction over projects of a certain size. It did get the approval from there. It got approval as what they call a development of regional impact, and it I was also granted a hardship exemption, which means in English that there are some regulations that they were exempted from having to follow because to follow them would have basically been too onerous for the project and would have scuttled the entire thing due to the cost. And the development of regional impact means that basically it is a project that is regional in scope and that will affect more than just the town that it is in. So that, you know, it's Cape Cod Commission for it's a big deal, basically.
But right.
It's this. So it's a 91,000 square foot facility. It's going to be on more than 8 acres off of Merchants Way and Business Lane out there in Independence Park. It's going to have a 2-story athletic field house, indoor ice rink, indoor turf field, indoor swimming pool, locker rooms, batting cages. The list goes on and on and on. So it's going to be quite a large facility with some outdoor space for football, lacrosse, soccer, and field hockey games. So this commission decision now allows them to go to the town to get their permitting. The town still has to review it for building permitting and I believe there's a zoning issue coming up too.
Yeah. Yep.
But that's the commission is sort of the big regulatory hurdle before the town permitting process can begin. So they are moving right along and they'll be headed to the town now for the next layer of approval on that.
And I noticed that some of the comments in the report from the commission say that they feel good about this project because it appears at this point that it will really benefit the community and that the project developers, Mike Sherman, who's a former head coach of the Green Bay Packers and Warren Nyhan of Marston's Mills, are really trying to partner up with other groups focused on kids, right?
Yeah, they're working in partnership with the Hyannis Youth and Community Center to sort of amplify the region's ability to host events. So they're trying not to compete, but to work hand in hand with some other facilities. And of course, you know, tying it as many things can be tied back to the opioid epidemic, you know, providing recreational alternatives and programs for the youth is seen as a good way to help fight that and to keep kids off of drugs. So they are definitely working with, you know, and not necessarily against the other sort of recreation efforts in town on that front as well.
Yeah, yeah. Moving down to Falmouth, the Steamship Authority is in the middle of a huge port redevelopment project, but it's had to push back a timeline for its headquarters on Palmer Ave because they discovered some faulty building materials.
That's right. The first phase of this $60 million six-year project is building a new headquarters at the Palmer Avenue parking lot because the current headquarters is in the current terminal building, which will be demolished as part of this realignment of all the slips and the construction of a new terminal building and basically everything looking different down there in the next 6 to 7 years. But some faulty building materials are pushing back the completion date on that headquarters, which is sort of the first part that they need to be able to do everything else because you can't really knock down the building if people are still working in it.
So small detail.
One would hope. So it's some siding that wasn't performing well when it was attached to the steel framework. There was some give to it that they didn't like. So the manufacturer said they had to take it all down, put plywood over the steel frame, and then attach a different kind of material to alleviate those deficiencies. And they had been working at that for about 7 days before, 7 to 10 days before they had to go back and undo it, Steamship officials said this week. So it's going to put back the date of being able to occupy that building for about a month. It was going to be done in late December. It might be done in early January, but that's also the time when they open up reservations for the summer season. So they don't want to be in the middle of a move or have just completed a move when they start that very busy time. So if they can't get it done by, you know, if it's more than a few days backlog, they're going to have to push it back to the end of the month to kind of allow that process to happen, which then in turn delays the demolition of the terminal, which then in turn can delay the marine work that they're planning to do this year. Now,
right.
It's important to note they're trying to do all this in the off season so that they don't have construction going on right now when there's, you know, 10 times as many people going through the terminal. So there's only a finite amount of work they can get done basically before the 1st of June. So they're hoping to make up some of that time, but they might lose some marine work this year. But then also, you know, they might be able to, they're, in the long run, they're not saying it's going to push it out a year, but in the short term, there are going to be some delays and possibly some sort of reshuffling of when stuff gets done.
Yeah, real domino effect there with that one problem kind of rippling out to the rest of the project.
It is. It's such a tight space out there that there really aren't many alternatives to you know, to move things around if things don't go the way they need it to.
Yeah, that's right. And I will move to the Outer Cape with another development project, so to speak, or actually a moratorium on development. And that's in East Ham along Route 6. Selectmen want to put kind of a type of moratorium on development so they can kind of take a look at other zoning rules and stuff like that.
Yes, I think that that's the... I don't have that story, Katie. Can you fill me in on that one?
Well, yes, I can.
Great.
I happen to have it right here.
Lovely.
The selectmen have asked, they would like the Cape Cod Commission and the County Assembly of Delegates to approve what's called a District of Critical Planning Concern. And that basically would allow the town to put a moratorium on any kind of development for a year so that they could take a look at some of the regulations they have there in zoning rules and things like that and have a longer-term plan. And the impetus for that is that there's been some unpopular proposed developments along that stretch of road, like an affordable housing development unit at the Tea Time Golf driving range and a dollar store on a vacant lot. So that's the first step for them. I think they have a long way to go with that. But I pulled that kind of last minute thinking that was interesting as, you know, the Cape is a tight spot for we're so built out. And we've got so many kind of competing interests down here with preservation and historic nature, but also the need to have, you know, shopping centers and places to live and that kind of
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a very good summary, Katie. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And we're going to turn now to some news from Nantucket. We have Josh Balling from the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror on the phone. Morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Well, some sad news to start. A high surf advisory this week along Nantucket and the Cape, and unfortunately it resulted in a drowning on the island.
It did. On Wednesday afternoon, a Massachusetts man, 46-year-old man, drowned in the high surf off Nobodyer Beach on the island's south shore. It was some of the heaviest surf that Nantucket's seen in the summertime, at least, in years. There were some 10 to 12-foot waves. There were some pretty severe rip currents as well. The town's lifeguards and harbor master had actually closed the South Shore beaches to anyone but surfers, but it's hard to keep everyone out of the water. And this gentleman, Terrell Ian Diorio, the police have not released his hometown, but they did say he wasn't from Nantucket, did drown at the beach just after noon on Wednesday. He was pulled from the surf by some lifeguards, assisted by some surfers, and they did CPR for some time before he was transported to the hospital, where he was pronounced dead. The surf was quite something to see. The lifeguards also made about 25 other actual rescues up and down the South Shore, and dozens more assists. So they actually went in and pulled 25 people out, and then helped dozens and dozens more. They really encourage anyone, obviously, when the red flags go up, to really stay out of the water, go to the North Shore, where it's a little bit calmer, unless you're unless you're a surfer. If you're a very experienced swimmer, they still say when those double red flags go up, it's really, you know, they mean business. And unfortunately, a man lost his life on Wednesday here.
Mm-hmm. Very sad. In other news, the Island Hospital is having a tough time finding and retaining doctors.
It is. Nantucket Cottage Hospital, one of the smallest, if not the smallest, in the state. It is an affiliate and has merged with Partners Healthcare and Mass General Hospital. But given the geographic isolation, given its size, it just can't seem to retain doctors all that well. It's hired several over the past few years, and they stay for a year or two, and then they move on. It's of its six full-time physicians, three of them are getting up there in years and maybe thinking about retirement soon. So they've taken a proactive step. They've hired an in-house recruiter to find primary care doctors to live and work on Nantucket. They found that using headhunters just wasn't finding the right candidates. There are candidates that need to kind of be special doctors. As Dr. Tim Leprey, who has been here for decades, says, he's the island's primary surgeon. And he said, you have to kind of be a special type of person. You have to be able to deal with the highs and lows of the seasonality of Nantucket, where you're very, very busy in the summer, and then there may be, you know, some downtime in the winter. You also have to accept the responsibility that comes with being in a small hospital where you don't necessarily have the ability to consult with a dozen other doctors on the fly, he said, and take matters, use your experience and your judgment and your training to take matters into your own hands on a foggy night in February when you can't bring a helicopter in and fly somebody off. So
yeah.
the hospital is, you know, really trying to be proactive, trying to keep up the number of physicians it has here through this new in-house recruitment program. They're hoping that pays dividends.
Mm. And briefly, the island is like many of us. I've got my glasses ready. We're gearing up for Monday's partial eclipse.
We are the Mariah Mitchell Association out here on Nantucket, named after Mariah Mitchell, the famous astronomer who discovered a comet from the roof of the Pacific National Bank, is holding a full day of activities on Monday. They have glasses available, and out here on Nantucket, there will be about a 71% totality. So it's going to get a little dark. You'll be able to see 71% eclipse of the sun, and that's going to happen here at about 2:50 in the afternoon.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Josh, and for the update on all the news that's happening this weekend and throughout the week on the island. That's Josh Balling, Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too.
And with me on the line is Sean Driscoll, a reporter from the Cape Cod Times. He joins us from the newsroom this morning. Sean, another whale was found dead this week off the coast of Cape Cod.
That's right. It's the 13th right whale to be found dead this season, sadly enough. This one was found about 145 miles east of Cape Cod, and it was identified as a white right whale named Couplet, who was a frequent visitor to the Cape. First arrived here as a yearling in 1992 and had been out here 15 of the 26 years of her life. And the last time she had been sighted was back in 2015, and that a year earlier she had brought the last of her five calves to the Cape with her. So it's been a particularly bad year for right whale deaths, and the population, of course, is so fragile that to lose even just one a year can be seen as is catastrophic. And now they've got more than a dozen that have died, unfortunately. So. And they only have been able to document five births this year. So it has been just a very, very bad year for right whale deaths, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I read somewhere about 2% now of the population has been lost. And that, of course, is quite a bit when you've only got about 500 left in the entire world. So anytime we're keeping a close eye now, anytime we hear anything about a whale, we're paying attention to that.
Sure. And a lot of this has happened up in Canada, too, in Canadian waters, and they're not quite as far along as we are in developing plans to work around them. And they are escalating those plans, I believe, even now, and have taken some measures this year. So hopefully we won't have a repeat of this going forward if, Canadian officials develop a little bit more of a plan like what we have.
Yeah. We have so much more to cover, but we do need to go to a break. We'll be right back with more on The Point's weekly news roundup. Welcome back to the news roundup on The Point. We are discussing the top local news stories of the week. I'm Catherine Ident in for Steve Junker. Joining me on the line from the Cape Cod Times is Sean Driscoll. Sean, Lyme disease, it's a big issue on the Cape Coast and the islands. And now a community just off Cape has decided to follow Barnstable County's lead with tick-borne illness education.
That's right. Plymouth County is going to hire an entomologist to lead tick prevention efforts, just as Barnstable County has. The line that caught me my attention in the story is that ticks don't know county borders, and that is absolutely correct, of course. And Plymouth County, right on, sharing a border with us, that some towns in that county are seeing very high tick-borne disease rates, as high as 450 cases per 100,000 people, which is one of those figures that sounds sort of low, but it is actually quite high when you're comparing it to Barnstable County, that's declined from 122 cases per 100,000 down to 113 for the entire county.
Wow.
So some of those rates in the towns in Plymouth County are very, very high. So they've hired an entomologist to take on the role of kind of leading prevention efforts, developing a social media plan, working with health agents, schools, councils on aging, and basically probably anyone who would have him, I would imagine, to help to help educate residents of the 27 towns that are out there.
Right. And there's some, comments about our entomologist here on the Cape Larry Dapsis being called the, quote, tick guru, which I thought was funny. But he really has had some success, and the numbers are showing it clearly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, down, as I said, 122 cases, the rate, I'm not doing the math in my head, but
right.
122 cases, down to 113 per 100,000 for a total of 245 confirmed and probable cases just last year.
Yeah.
So there absolutely is. I mean, you hear about it every year. They're very prompt about getting words out when there are issues. Now, the Lyme disease rates have declined in Plymouth County as well, but their rate is still higher than Barnstable County. according to state statistics. So, you know, this is the first – Plymouth County is the first government entity really trying to seek to replicate the Barnstable County model. But, you know, Larry Dapsis has fielded calls from communities across the country looking to do similar things. So definitely the way that Barnstable County has taken the lead on this seems to be catching on in other places as well.
Wow. Influencing. Over the bridges. We're going to turn to the Outer Cape now for some news with Ann Wood of the Provincetown Banner. Good morning, Ann.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm good. We're going to start with another kind of sad story. A diver who went missing last week was found. It's another tragic accident on the water this summer.
A very sad story. On Wednesday, August 9th, I was actually sitting in my apartment and saw search helicopters from the Air Force outside, from the Coast Guard outside, and saw a Center for Coastal Studies boat looking like it was making a search, and found out that John Garcia had gone missing. He went diving that Wednesday morning at about 11 a.m. and didn't resurface. And about 11:40, a crew member of a Boston Whaler dive boat contacted the Coast Guard saying that he had lost his dive flag shortly after making the descent in a 35 feet of water, and that he had only had 30 to 35 minutes remaining on his oxygen tank. So everybody jumped right in to try to search for him. The Coast Guard, the helicopter crew, Coast Guard from Provincetown, the helicopter crew from Down Cape, the Harbor Master's Office, Center for Coastal Studies, all sorts of people went looking for him, recreational vehicles, Towboat USA, and they spent all day out there. I went out to Long Point on a water taxi, Flyers water taxi, and watched as the search progressed. At first, they were looking at the bay side of Long Point where he took the dive, couldn't find him, and then were on the ocean side of Long Point still looking for him. They called that to a halt late Wednesday, resumed it on Thursday with helicopters and the Coast Guard, and everybody went back out there. But then decided to just stop the search efforts at 3 o'clock on Thursday. Then Friday afternoon, we got word that his body was found at about 3 o'clock by the state police underwater recovery team. Apparently, they received more specific information about where the initial dive took place and found the body that afternoon. So it is a really sad story. He was an 80-year-old man from Foxborough, came up here lost of many years, had a lot of friends out here in Provincetown, who had been diving for more than 50 years, is very experienced, so it was pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah, something just went wrong there. Very sad. In other news, CVS, the pharmacy chain, is appealing a town ruling that denied a special permit to let it open a store on Bradford Street, and the CVS officials are saying that the town is being discriminatory.
Right. So the Zoning Board of Appeals denied CVS a special permit which would allow it to open here. The special permit would allow it to open despite the town's formula business bylaw, which was enacted in 2010 by annual town meeting to try to keep Provincetown looking like Provincetown, keep chain businesses out of here. So after the ZBA filed its ruling, the CVS had 20 days to appeal. It did. It filed an appeal in Mass Land Court last week. Its lawyer, Attorney James Vieira, who's a Cape lawyer, said in court documents that the town's formula business bylaw raises legal questions. He argues that it has the right to operate in the commercial district of town, and that it's being discriminatory by unlawfully and failing to treat equally all businesses, whether they're formula, how many, you know, whether they're formula businesses, whether they're several stores or not. Mm. And CVS, as we know, has tons of stores all over the United States. The weird thing, well, the interesting thing is the town, somebody in town had filed a petition, sent it to a bunch of CVS guys. There was 1,200 electronic signatures and 47 print pages of print signatures and 30 pages of comments in opposition, and people saying they would boycott CVS if it came to town. The representative wouldn't really speak on that, but said he received it, but apparently they don't care. CVS is going to move forward and try to come here.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to keep an eye on that and see what happens there.
We sure will.
In the land court. Ann Wood of the Provincetown Banner, thanks for checking in with us. Have a great
thanks
weekend.
Thanks so much. You too.
Also on the line from the Cape Cod Times newsroom is Sean Driscoll with Cape News. And Dennis, selectmen have appointed a new committee to deal with what some call excessive partying on some of the beaches in town.
Yeah, we're calling it the sex committee here because that sounds a lot more fun. But so there was this incident, which I'm sure many people remember, of a report of young people allegedly being seen having sex in the water. That was not actually witnessed by police, but they were drunk, allegedly drunk and disorderly, refused to ignore police orders and got arrested. So thanks to the wonders of social media, this blew up. There were many videos of it that were posted online. So Sluckman this week have appointed members to a new committee focused on beach safety in response to sort of town anger and concern about not just this incident, but what residents see as sort of a growing pattern of misconduct and sort of out of control behavior at Dennis beaches. So this July 4th weekend incident is just sort of the tipping point, they say, of a pattern of behavior that's been going on, you know, for quite a while now. So it's a 7-member committee that's going to include representatives from other beach committees in town, beach committee and the beach management advisory task force, in addition to some citizens and some people from other departments as well. So they're trying to kind of come up with some recommendations to the Board of Selectmen for dealing with the beach safety, rule enforcement, traffic congestion, drop-offs, parking, and the like, trying to sort of curb the you know, the swell of people that they say can cause these kinds of issues. So and it's an ad hoc committee, so they're going to do their thing and then disband. But it is, you know, they're trying to come up with some recommendations to sort of try to stop things, big crowd things like this, from happening in future years.
Right. And they're holding, it looks like they're holding their first meeting on Monday evening at the town hall there in Dennis. So
that's right.
We're going to look at some news from Martha's Vineyard. We have Sarah Brown on the phone from the Martha's Vineyard Gazette. Morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
Well, we were just talking about ticks on the mainland a few minutes ago, but you got a story this week about how the Lone Star tick is spreading on Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah, it's interesting. This has been just kind of tracked over the last few years, and the Lone Star ticks, of course, are distinguishable by the white dot that females have in the middle of their bodies. And biologist Richard Johnson here on the island has been documenting their spread for a while, and he said 10 years ago there were few, if any. They were really not here. And within the last year, he's confirmed that not only are they here, but they're breeding. And the epicenter of the population seems to be on Chappaquiddick, and a lot of field work has been done there documenting, you know, where all these ticks are, Lone Star ticks are. But they're moving on to the main island here, too. There's a really interesting map that was created by the Martha's Vineyard Commission by Chris Seidel over there, which shows sites around the island where at least one tick has been seen. And there are these huge clusters, huge purple dots around Chappie, but also a lot of sightings over in Aquinnah and Chilmark, a few in West Tisbury, I think one in Edgartown, kind of by South Beach. So they're really documenting that they're here, and they seem, you know, for a while it seemed like mainly they were in Chappaquiddick. Maybe that's because that's where the studies were going on, but now that they're elsewhere too. And there are a couple of interesting things about Lone Star ticks. Their bites are painful.
Yeah.
They carry several diseases, including tularemia and spotted fever. And also, and this is interesting, they don't feed on white-footed mice, but solely on deer, which kind of goes back to the larger debate on the island about what to do about all ticks and tick-borne illness and, of course, Lyme disease.
Yeah, it's tricky. Yeah.
Extend deer hunting.
Yeah. Tricky issue when now that you've got this additional species here. Yeah.
Yeah, and this has been discussed a lot in the last year about maybe expanding the deer hunting season on the island so more deer can be taken and the population might go down. And there's likely to be a public hearing on the vineyard about this proposal sometime soon with state fish and wildlife officials. And also, there's going to be a presentation in a few weeks about this tick research. For people who want to find out more, it's August 28th at the Agricultural Hall in West Tisbury. And part of that is also, Richard Johnson said, an appeal to keep this research going. He's been trying to help islanders, you know, work about with evaluating their properties, reducing the amount of ticks there. The grant he's working with has run out, so he's also going to be putting out a call to donors to help keep the program going so he can keep documenting, you know, where the ticks are and also where these Lone Star ticks are.
Yeah. Yeah. In other news there on the island, the Vineyard Fishermen's Preservation Trust completed its first lease deal with a local fisherman.
Yeah, it's a cool story for the island's fishing community. the, as you said, the Martha's Vineyard Fishermen's Preservation Trust. They've been working for a while on plans to build, you know, a permit bank, which would allow them to lease out fishing permits to local vineyard fishermen, and to, and or to lease out fishing quota, which is the amount of fish of a species a fisherman is allowed to take. And both of those things can be hard to come by, really expensive, especially for fishermen who run smaller operations, you know, maybe just a single fisherman who's going out and not part of a big company or something. And so this has had an impact on the number of local fishermen who are still in business on the island. And the trust recently was able to lease nearly $1 million worth of sea scalloping quota to an island fisherman, which is really cool, Sam Hopkins, for a much lower cost than $1 million. And they raised the money for that. And this will allow him to catch up to 17,000 pounds of sea scallops a year, which he said, you know, would help him, you know, maybe not, he said it was not going to, you know, make his year, but it might, right like that, but it would help him maybe get going towards making his year and making the amount of money he needs to make and catch the amount of scallops he needs to make. So this has been a goal of the Fishermen's Preservation Trust for a while, to raise money to do this and help local fishermen, and this is the first beneficiary of that effort, which is a cool milestone for them, and they have plans to do more with, like I said, permits and quota. So it's kind of the first step, and I think what they're hoping is going to be a large effort to really kind of bolster the fishing community here.
Yeah, wow, that's very cool. Yeah. Nice story there. Well, Sarah Brown, thanks so much. That's Sarah Brown of the Vineyard Gazette. Have a great weekend, Sarah.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
And we have on the line Andy Tomolonis from the Standard Times with news of the South Coast. Good morning, Andy.
Hi.
You have an interesting story this week about Ocean State Job Lot. It has this uncanny ability to thrive when other retailers are closing stores. What's the secret?
Well, so that's true. And we have an Ocean State Job Lot store that's opening in Fairhaven. And certainly there have been many that opened recently in other towns. But we looked a little bit at the why this the chain seems to thrive. And what's happened here in this case is they've moved from one location in Fairhaven to a much larger location. And what happens is the big box retailers, they're having some problems. They close a building, and town officials worry and wonder what's going to fill in its place.
Right.
And so we had a case in 2015 of a big Walmart store that moved in Wareham, and an Ocean State Job Lot filled that store in the Cranberry Plaza. And the newest one is happening in Fairhaven, and it's taking over a spot where Shaw's Market had closed. And so what David Sarlito, executive director of the chain, told us is that it goes beyond other closeout stores, partly because it sells seasonal merchandise and gourmet food. And those are really high items for the chain.
Interesting. An interesting combination of products to sell, but clearly it's got a niche and it's got a foothold. We've, you know, Ocean State Job Lots are sprinkled around
yes.
here, the Cape and the South Coast. So
yes, they are.
Oh, that's very interesting. Andy, thank you for checking in with us with this really interesting business story. Andy Tomolonis from the Standard Times. Have a great weekend.
Thanks.
And we have on the line Sean Driscoll from the Cape Cod Times. Sean, stay with us. We got to take a break, but we'll get back to more news after this. Stay with us. Welcome back to the News Roundup. On The Point, we are discussing the top local news stories of the week. I'm Catherine Ident in for Steve Junker. And on the line with me is Sean Driscoll, who comes to us from the Cape Cod Times newsroom. Sean, we have a couple uplifting stories I'd like to talk about for a minute or two here. This week, some folks in Hyannis who had recently taken some CPR training put it to good use and saved a man's life.
That's right. It was called the Miracle on School Street, but the Champ Homes, a faith-based organization that provides housing and skills for homeless youth and adults, saved the life of a Melrose man this week, Mr. George Dakin, who was walking from a parking lot to the Steamship Authority terminal to catch a ferry to Nantucket, collapsed on a sidewalk just outside of the Champ Homes campus on School Street in Hyannis. He didn't have any kind of history of heart issues, but he suffered a 100% blockage of a part of the heart that I won't try to talk about here. But basically, they call it the Widowmaker heart attack. So
yes.
It's one that is almost always fatal.
Very serious.
Yes. And the director of the homes and another staff member and a resident came out and started to do CPR and were taking turns doing chest compressions on him until paramedics could come. They had just received their CPR certification 2 months earlier, and thought it would be a prudent thing to have for some of the staff and some of the residents as well. And it turned out certainly to be the case. And they thought that he had died. He had not responded, but they were trained to keep going until medical personnel get there. They took him to the hospital. He didn't seem to be responsive at that point. It was only the next day that his daughter and family members visited the Champ home to let him know that the man had survived, and they were overjoyed, obviously, that that he had made it. And the man's daughter said he only had a 7% chance of survival, so it really is a miracle that he made it through that, and hopefully will be in good health. And I think that he was supposed to be released from the hospital this week, and he's Mr. Dakin's planning to come back to visit the people at Champ Homes who helped save his life. So it was definitely a good outcome and a nice story for them this week and their assistance with this man.
Yeah, wow. And then in Falmouth, there's was a pretty terrible car accident earlier this summer where three people were injured, but one severely. But it looks like the community really rallied around these people.
They did. These were all student workers from Macedonia, as it turned out, although I think that there was sort of an assumption initially that these were people from Falmouth, but they had been walking along the side of the road on Route 28, and it was a foggy night, and a driver crossed the fog line and struck three of them, two of them very seriously, one of them very, very seriously, throwing her 100 feet, and she's had some very serious injuries. But the faith community there and the community at large has really come forward to help these young individuals from Macedonia. The woman who was injured very seriously, of course, they're not able to travel back to Macedonia, so their families have come out here. And there's been fundraisers to help between these three people replace some of their lost wages from being hurt, to help with medical costs as well. They've helped with housing. When the families have come out here to be with their families. So there really has been a huge outpouring of support amongst multiple churches, from Falmouth Jewish Congregation to the Wequoyat Congregational Church. The congregational lines know no boundaries on these kind of things. The churches in Falmouth really always do a good job of working together, and they are in this case as well.
Yeah, well, they've raised quite a bit of money, $24,000 or more, to help these families. That's really nice. We're going to take a moment to talk with Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle. Good morning, Tim.
Yeah, no, my pleasure.
And a Chatham story here. Selectmen decided not to go with a roundabout that would help ease congestion at a busy town intersection.
Right. Now, this is the intersection where there are traffic lights at the corner of Route 28 and Crowell Road. Selectmen on Tuesday were looking at design options for upgrading this corner, and they decided against a roundabout in favor of instead widening the intersection and placing left turning lanes on Route 28 and a new traffic light. Now, engineers said a roundabout would probably help alleviate traffic backups at the intersection, which are very common during the summer here. The grade on the road is unfortunately too steep to accommodate a rotary. It would or a roundabout. There would be drainage issues. Chiefly. I think selectmen were probably pretty relieved that this option wasn't feasible from an engineering point of view because, as you may remember, about a mile or so to the west, in the West Chatham area, there are two roundabouts proposed and actually going to be constructed next year as part of the West Chatham Roadway project that have been a real lightning rod for controversy. So the roundabouts aren't exactly the top choice here.
Not popular.
At this point.
No.
Yeah, so this project, though, has been looked at for a couple years now, and it's slated for construction in 2021. It's a $2.8 million project. All but $500,000 of that are going to be covered by federal highway funds. Now, this week's decision by the selectmen starts a 60-day comment period, and there will be another informational meeting with large-scale graphics of the option of choice coming up within that two-month period.
All right.
And then there'll be another hearing in a few months when they get the final design plans ready.
So plenty of time for the public to weigh in on this.
Yeah, and if people want to know more information about who to contact or where to send their comments, they could go to our website, capecodchronicle.com, and click on the story, and the information is there.
And we just have a few seconds, but in Harwich, fireworks are coming back after a 10-year hiatus.
Indeed. The last time there were fireworks at the Harwich Cranberry Festival was 2008, but the Harwich Chamber of Commerce and the Harwich Cranberry Festival have stepped up this year to bring back fireworks. They're going to be held on September 16th, just after the Cran Jam Music Fest, about 8 o'clock, behind the community center. And everybody is really looking forward to those coming back. They've been a highlight of the festival for many years. They were stopped when the festival was downscaled back then in 2008, 2009. But they're coming back. They've got some sponsors, and it should make it an even more festive occasion.
All right. Well, thanks so much for that update from Chatham and Harwich. Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle.
Thank you, Catherine.
We're going to turn now to more news from Martha's Vineyard. We have George Brennan, news editor at the Martha's Vineyard Times, on the line. Good morning, George.
Hi, Katie. How are you today?
I'm good. You have a story about vineyarders who are offering rides and running errands so their elderly neighbors can stay home.
Yeah, this program is the Vineyard Village at Home program, and it's a really cool program because there aren't a lot of options over here for assisted living, and this really is sort of a volunteer assisted living program. Folks drive people to their medical appointments, drive them to shopping, things like that, and also some of them will come into your home and do a little housekeeping, maybe make some food for you, those types of things. And, you know, the program is very rewarding for the people who do it. They say it's among the best thing they do in their day is going out and helping these people. And the people that they're meeting have fantastic stories to tell. You know, some of them might be a photosynthetic geneticist. You know, in one home, you might meet someone who, you know, lived through the occupation of Germany and France. You know, there are fascinating people here on the island, and, you know, they get together in this program.
Oh, wow. That sounds like a great program, also offering folks some needed things to help them stay where they want to be, which is at home.
That's so right.
That's really great. And in just a few seconds here, you have a big weekend coming up on the island. What's going on?
We have some breaking news here for you.
Okay.
The Oak Bluffs is having fireworks this weekend. They were scheduled for tonight, but because of weather considerations, the Oak Bluffs Fire Department has moved them to Sunday night at 9 p.m. So that's one of the big events happening here. The other one is the Ag Fair is going on this weekend. Maybe not the best day to go today, but, hey, if you're in Falmouth for the road race, jump on one of the ferries, come over here, go to the Ag Fair on Saturday. It should be a great time. And, by the way, the MB Times has a booth there. I'll be there on Saturday. Stop by and say hello.
Ah, meet George Brennan.
There you go.
That's Martha's Vineyard Times news editor George Brennan. Thanks for giving us a call.
Thank you.
It.
Take care.
And on the line with me is Sean Driscoll from the Cape Cod Times newsroom. Sean, some sports news. The Cape Cod Baseball League wound down this week. A storybook win for the Brewster Whitecaps.
That's right. Their first Cape League championship since 2000, and they did it in three games with a 2-0 win over the Bourne Braves on Sunday. I was working. I was following it on Twitter, and it was very actually exciting because it was a 2-0 game. Brewster had great defense, turned three double plays, and this is the most sports I've ever talked about at NPR, I think. But it was one of those games that was really tight and could have gone either way, you know, just a little. It wasn't a big margin of victory, but it was huge for them. Brewster in 2016 lost their last five regular season games and missed the playoffs by 1 point. This year, they really had a surge towards the late season and carried that into the playoffs with them. So it was a huge win for them and really a great season all around, of course, again, for the Cape League baseball.
Yeah, regular season champs were Orleans. And it sounds like they had a great crowd for Sunday's game. 4,500 people. That's a lot.
That is. I know the first game of the series drew 3,000, which is a lot, but they really packed them in, you know, for a decisive game. You're always going to get people to come out, and the weather was beautiful. So what else should you be doing except watching great free baseball on the Cape?
Oh, yeah, with upcoming stars and just, as you said, some great baseball. And I loved the story in the paper where they talked to some of the players and the bond that they built together. They sounded like they're a tight-knit group.
Yeah, the shortstop, you know, several of them just talked about them being a family. They spend all season together. It really is sort of such a unique experience. And I think, you know, a lot of Cape League alumni have said that. But they believed in each other. They were there for each other all year, and defense was kind of an issue for them early in the season. They worked on it and really, you know, got better as a team. And, you know, they really, a lot of these guys are our best friends and probably will carry those friendships with them into their professional careers and later on in life as well. So really a lot of these teams do form tight-knit bonds, and the Whitecaps seem to be no different this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Great story there. And it wouldn't be a week of news in the summer without at least a mention of sharks. And there's two mentions of sharks here. A video, which after the show ends, people should go Google if you haven't already. A family visiting from the UK saw some great white sharks eating a minke whale off Provincetown.
That's right. They they were feasting on a dead minke whale, the great white, off of Provincetown a week ago today. They were on a whale watch tour and got some great video of it. And this family from the United Kingdom said they were gobsmacked by the entire affair. But it was one of those things that, you know, they are so prolific out there that a lot of people can see them, you know, just by happenstance, not even if you're looking. They're on a whale watch vessel and they saw this dead whale, and all of a sudden here's this shark, you know, having a snack. So it was it's quite a great video. They got some underwater GoPro video as well. So it is worth the time to check out on our website for sure.
Yeah. And this whale was first reported, I guess, off Plymouth Harbor, but it shows you, too, how currents move things, and the whale kind of made its way down to off the tip of Provincetown there. And it looks like they're not sure how that whale died.
No, they're not, and I don't think that, certainly it's easy pickings for the shark, so I don't think that the shark killed the whale necessarily,
no.
But, you know, it's sort of a buffet for the shark to find a dead whale that's not going to fight back, so... they're not sure at this point. I know that they are investigating it. If it comes to shore, that they will pick it up. But I don't know that, as you said, currents are funny things. So it could be in Maine by now or not.
Exactly,
who knows
right.
where, who right. knows where it is, but it's, that's something that IFAW I think is going to look at if it does wash ashore.
Yeah. And in whale news, in a sense, I think it's just interesting to note that it is the third death of a minke whale in the region in little over a month, and researchers, you know, there's no, you know, they don't have necessarily a reason for that. It's not necessarily a trend or anything, but we've talked a lot about marine species in this show, and there's another set out there of whales. So, and there was a Florida company on the Cape testing out a new kind of technology to watch for sharks.
That's right. They're using this company is using high-def cameras suspended from balloons over the beach to keep an eye out for sharks, which is just such a cool merging of high tech and low tech to basically strap a camera to a balloon. It's really interesting when you think about drones and all the stuff that we're doing now. But video trials used some fancy technology, I will say, to sum it up, but that they're able to, spot body surfers, boogie boarders, but also to be able to see where the seals were and then to spot, you know, sharks, even, you know, 20 feet down in the open ocean, 6 to 10 feet in the shallows of swimming areas. So they can really see down much clearer than you could see from, you know, looking at it laterally from the beach to spot whales that might not be visible to the naked eye, but you could see from up above. And it really only takes about one or two balloons to cover a beach's protected swimming area, kind of dependent on the size. And these cameras are about $5,000 to $6,000 each, but the company said they might be able to work with towns on those purchases if they were, you know, if it does become a thing that they want to do. But it goes up to 400 feet and wind speeds up to 17 miles an hour, so it can really
hang
in there on a blustery Cape day. It can hang in there
good,
for sure,
which is good. We've got winds here, and I should say it didn't see any sharks, which is comforting in a way, I guess.
In a way, yes. I think they want to see some sharks to see how it looks.
Yeah.
But they got a good look at what they were seeing at least, so it's promising.
That's right. Well, we are out of time. Sean Driscoll, reporter with the Cape Cod Times, thanks so much for joining us from the Cape Cod Times newsroom.
Thanks, Katie.
And thanks to our other contributors, Josh Balling of the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror, Sarah Brown from the Martha's Vineyard Times, Tim Wood from the Cape Cod Chronicle, Andy Tomalonis from the Standard Times, Ann Wood from the Provincetown Banner, and George Brennan from the Martha's Vineyard Times. And I want to thank you for listening. I'm Catherine Ident, in for Steve Junker.